You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
The only thing about watermelon is it's like a Taiwanese hooker. It is 50-50 if you're going to like what you find when you open it up.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator Lori Calcaterra. And now your host. He's ready for Thanksgiving. And by ready, we mean ready to have an uncomfortable conversation about immigration with his uncle, Dees Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. Welcome back. Look at that, guys. 2 weeks in a row for this weekly podcast that has been a little bumpy this last year. I know. But better than the year before. So we're getting back on track with that weekly schedule. So I appreciate you guys hanging in there. As usual, tell a friend, rate us on iTunes. I don't even think iTunes exists anymore. Don't do that. Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, tell a friend, let someone know. And we appreciate you hanging out. And as always, guys, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows across the country. Coming up after Thanksgiving, I'm taking the rest of November off, but I will be at Upstage Comedy Lounge December 8th. So come check that out. And then that's in San Antonio, Texas. Then I'll be in North Carolina later in December. So come check out those shows too. We'll have all the dates on the calendar. And that is it. We're just going to get in it with our guests today because you guys know where to find all the stuff we're doing. Today, our guest comes to us from not too far away, up by Dallas, Texas, comic book creator Lori Calcaterra. Lori, how you doing?
Hi, thanks for having me on the show, Dees. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. You're in like Dallas, right? Dallas, Arlington, Plano, something like that up there,
yeah.
Right? You don't have to give your exact address. You don't have to drop a
I'm at 1234 Main Street. I'm in Prosper. Most people have never heard of Prosper. It's super tiny. If you drive through it and you blink, you have missed Prosper. It's basically directly north of Frisco. West of McKinney. So along that madness called 380 or University Drive. If you've ever driven on it, you know what a headache it is. That's where we are. In the middle of the madness.
Anywhere up there in Dallas is not the drive. That kind of like major metropolitan area, you know, like it's too wild for me. And it's like Dallas has like the three of the top five deadliest highways in America.
Is it really?
Yeah. Three of the top five deadliest highways in America are in Dallas. One's in Houston, and another one's in Florida.
What are they?
Like one's part of the 35. Okay. The other one's part of, I think, is it the 20 that goes through? One of the east-west ones. I'd have to look them up again, but I saw this graphic the other day, and I'm like, that makes sense. Dallas is, those people are crazy.
Well, good news is I'm about a 40-minute drive outside of Dallas, so I don't have to deal with the crazies in the city. It's pretty quiet where we are, except for the construction on 380. But it's like if you go like a few miles north, there's like chicken farms. That's where we are.
Oh, I like that.
We're right on the border, right, where it becomes farmland again.
Yeah, well, they're building out to you guys, so they're trying to bring the crazy to your doorstep.
Yeah, in fact, Dallas North Tollway ends where our neighborhood connects.
Oh, really?
So that's as far north as you can go on the tollway is right where we are.
After that freedom, it becomes free again. We get real freedom.
It becomes empty space, lots of cows, maybe a hay bale.
Are you from that area originally? Did you grow up in?
No, I'm actually from Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Grew up there. Was married there. My husband and I moved to California for a few years for his job and then got moved back. to Michigan, and we actually relocated to Dallas area in 2019.
Okay.
And like built a house, moved in April 2020. So like,
oh, wow.
Our house is like is built, right? And they're doing like the final checks and thing, and then the shutdown happens, and we're like, can we move in? Like, no.
Yeah, I think you have to be in, they said. You don't have another choice but to be in.
I know, but we wanted to be out of the apartment and into the house that we built, you know? But they were like, well, we don't know if we can even meet in person to have you sign all the paperwork. You know what I mean? It was such a crazy time, but we did get in the house. But that's why it's like, I know enough people are like, oh, what's in your area? I'm like, I don't know. Because when we move in and then it was like, you know, lockdown, we didn't go anywhere. We didn't have any friends. Like, we had nothing. So people are like, what's good to eat here? And I'm like, I don't know.
I have that same problem. So we moved to San Antonio like 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And then my parents moved here shortly after, like a year later, and they're always like, oh, what do you, you know, do you know somewhere good to eat for this or that? And I'm like, if I don't have like a show at night that I gotta to go be somewhere, like, we don't go out, you know, like, I don't drink, my girlfriend doesn't drink, like, so
that's us too. I think we were always homebodies, but then after the pandemic, it was like, now we had an excuse to be a shut-in. So like, we're the same. We have kids, so we're always at home. Otherwise, you got to get a babysitter and nuts to that. Yeah. So.
Oh, you found someone else whose love language is agoraphobia.
Yes, thank you. Now we're definitely friends.
Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah, the only reason I actually I've like met some comedians here, but another comic who lived in Tacoma, Washington, but worked at one of the clubs I used to perform at a lot, moved here because his girlfriend is in the military, or his wife. And okay. I'm like, I kind of knew him. Like, we knew each other. We weren't like friends. We like knew each other. We, you know, hang out. We're in the same area. And I'm like, oh, we don't know each other. Let's be friends now. So I was like, now that we live in the same city, let's be friends. So that's like the only way we got to know one couple, you know?
Isn't that funny? It's so hard to make friends as adults.
Well, especially when you don't go out. Like, I mean, when I was young and drinking and out the bar, you make new friends every night. You know? I mean, maybe not lifelong, maybe not people on your Christmas card list, but you're meeting people.
Yeah, and that's so funny you said that because my husband's that way. We went and found a brewery. It's called the Manhattan Project that's in Dallas.
Okay.
And so we had a babysitter. He and I just went. It was our anniversary. We were just hanging out. And we had a great meal. And, you know, the more drinks we had, he's talking to, like, people sitting next to us. And I'm like, who's that? Yeah. He's like, I don't know. This guy's named Dave. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes. But it's like, you know, and you're not usually like that until you have a couple. And
yeah, you
like,
get a couple pops in you and you're good to go. I know. Yeah. Right? When I was drinking, I'd make the best friends every night. I'd wake up to like texts from people I don't have saved in my phone. Like, dude, that was great. I'm like, dude, I don't know who you are.
Who are you?
Yeah. you're getting tagged in pictures on Facebook. You're like, I don't like, remember being at a doing karaoke last night. So
it's good that I don't have a conventional job. We'll just say that.
There you go. Yeah. That's right.
You get tagged and stuff, and you're like, your boss is like, oh,
yeah.
Can you take that down,
yeah,
new friend?
that is the benefit of doing stand-up comedy for a living, is like getting tagged in ridiculous stuff is like, oh, this guy's fun, you know?
Yeah.
Like, one of my oddest experiences is I was in a city that I didn't know people. I was just performing. And this guy, I ended up talking to this guy at a brewery after a show, and he didn't realize who I was. And then I was telling him, I'm like, oh, I was doing comedy. He's like, oh, and I told him my name. He's like, oh, he's like, I listen to your podcast. Like, I've listened to your stand-up album. And I'm like, oh, thanks, man. He goes, and right as the waitress came up, he's like, you have the funniest abortion joke. I go, and I'm just looking at the waitress like,
hi.
Like, sorry, this is a weird thing to walk into.
What an entrance.
Yeah.
So. Did she just turn around and walk away? Like, what did she do?
Well, you know, her choice. Yeah, her body, her choice. What are you going to do?
She's like, you better tip real good.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's weird circumstances, but, you know.
It's funny.
So why did you guys choose Texas or Dallas? Or not Dallas, but Dallas, you know. Chose you?
My husband's in the auto industry.
Okay.
And more on the financial side. And so he was working for Chrysler, which then became TD Auto Finance through that whole 2008 debacle.
Sure.
And then
shell game.
What's that?
That shell game.
Pretty much. Yeah. Shell game. And then we ended up with Toyota. So he's actually with Toyota Financial and he works in the sales side, but their headquarters is here in Plano. It's giant, huge facility.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. They have like our own racetrack and everything. Oh, yeah. Okay. Like Toyota's real big here in Dallas area and they sponsor a ton of stuff.
Okay.
And they're real big. So they recruited him and it was one of those things like, you want to go to Texas? And I was like, well, my sister's here in Texas, but the rest of our family's in Michigan. Sure, why not? Like, let's go on an adventure. Let's do it, right? And so we ended up down here. Toyota was wonderful and helped move us. So it was as least bit stressful as it can be when you're moving across the country. Yeah. And we've done that twice. It's still stressful, but I love it here. I love it because I hate the snow and I hate being cold. Everybody's like, don't you miss white Christmas? No, fuck no. I don't miss white Christmas. You cannot get me to go back to Michigan for Christmas or any time in the winter. Pretty much from October to maybe April, I ain't going. It's cold.
That's honestly, Lori, I do a lot of stuff back in the Northwest where I used to live for a while still. October till April. I don't go. I'm like, no, catch me in the spring and summer. I'm not going, you know, like after September, I'm not going. If it's a little cold and rainy, I'm not going. Especially when there's snow, hell no.
Well, then I don't have the appropriate clothes anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not like I have a coat that I can wear to go to Michigan in December. I'll just freeze my butt off. So unless it's like a funeral or a wedding or something very important, you won't catch me in Michigan.
No, thanks. Yeah. In the words of the great Daniel Tosh, he goes, everyone says seasons. I like seasons. That's why I live in a state that skips the shitty ones.
Yeah. you're in San Antonio, so it's a little bit farther south, but we get like slush in February up here. It's just, it's cold and it rains and then it freezes. And that's winter. It's like it's January, February, and that's it. And then the beginning of March, it's spring, and then we go back to the pool weather, and I'm happy.
Hot. Yeah, it's great. I know. I love
it.
My neighbors think I'm crazy because when I moved here and I'm like, you know, we were doing a bunch of, outside kind of landscaping, re-landscaping the whole yard, redid it, put up a fence and stuff. And I'd be out in the middle of summer. It's 110 degrees out. And I'm, mowing the lawn, shoveling, building the fence.
Maybe don't do that.
I love the heat. And my neighbor's like, aren't you hot? You're crazy. I'm like, this is why I moved here. Like, the heat does not bother me at all. Like, I love it. So
I like the heat as well. And it's like, if you can just stay out of the sun from like 12 to 2, then you're fine. You know what I mean? Like, that's the time where we go inside. Like, we have a pool in the backyard. So the kids, if they want to swim, we can swim in the morning. And we can swim after 3 p.m. because that's when there's shade. And then after that, it's fine. Like, go on out. Go jump in the pool. I don't care if the pool's 90 degrees. It feels great.
Yeah, it is.
I like it.
It is a much better life. That's part of why we moved here. I just looked at my girlfriend one day and I'm like, I don't ever want to deal with winter. I never want to see snow against my will ever again, you know?
Yeah, and I don't even do any of the winter sports either. My hubs was like, let's go skiing. And I'm like, let's not.
Yeah.
I was like, you want to go ski? I'll be in the chalet. I will bring my knitting needles. I will sit there and drink some kind of hot coffee or chocolate or whatever.
Yeah, they got hot toddies going on over there, something.
I will drink that too. I will have a good old time knitting a scarf. See you later. Bye.
Where in Michigan were you guys at?
When we left, we were in Northville.
Okay.
Which is like, I don't know if you're familiar with Michigan. There's like Novi, and it's like it's probably about an hour outside of Detroit, but
okay.
A lot different from Detroit.
Sure, sure.
Detroit is its own animal. There's nothing else like it in the state.
One of my favorite stories was
about Detroit.
Yeah, about Detroit was a couple years ago.
Scary? Is it a scary one?
It's not your traditional, it doesn't even involve people necessarily. It's not like that type of scary or weird, but like the suburbs, like outside of the city, were getting so dilapidated, and all the people who couldn't afford, after 2008, people left all these houses and, foreclosures, and these houses were all getting reclaimed by the wilderness, just like trees were growing through the houses and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then these people were going through there trying to figure out what they're going to do, and they realized that a bunch of bears had moved into all the houses. It was literally the houses were just infested with bears living in them. This is how, that might be worse than, the worst part of actual Detroit, gangs and stuff.
Don't go in that house. They're like, why? Is it a crack house? No. Yeah. It's a bear house. excuse me, what? They're like, yeah, that one has actual bears.
Watch out.
Sleuth. They're called a sleuth. A sleuth of bears.
A sleuth? Is that what they call it? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
In a group, there's a murder is like the
There's
crows.
About to be. We got to figure out who committed the murder. It turns out it's the bears.
It's the bears. Oh, yeah. This dude's in pieces. I wonder who did it.
Oh, yeah, that was just hilarious to me. I'm like, oh, my God, that's a real, that's such a good encapsulation for Detroit, I felt like.
You know, I have a funny story about that, too. Right around 2008. And you're not kidding. There's whole neighborhoods that are just abandoned.
Yeah.
And maybe one house in there has people living in it, right?
Which is scarier than no people.
It is scary. It is super scary. Who's there?
Yeah. You're the one person in the neighborhood, just looking at that one house where did someone just look out that window?
Someone just drive by and that one house is someone staring at, or on the porch with a shotgun. Yeah, that's, keep driving. There was a proposal, it was called Z World Detroit, where they were going to buy a neighborhood and wall it in and make it into a zombie experience.
Oh.
So the hard part, though, was because the houses were so dilapidated that they had to go in and structurally reinforce the houses so they didn't fall down on you while you're in the house. You know what I mean? But you wanted the reinforcements to be hidden so that way it looks like you're in a zombie apocalypse, but you're not actually in any danger. It ended up falling through. They couldn't get the permits or they couldn't get something, but I was super excited about that. Can you imagine being able to go into this walled-in space and live out shooting zombies and... That would have been
that
so
sounds
much
great.
Fun.
You know, there you just go to downtown LA and you can live that experience. You don't need to wall it off. You're just there.
But please don't actually shoot the people, though. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The cops get crazy sometimes in LA.
I'm so glad I don't live out that way.
Years ago, not even that many, probably 5 years ago, there was this thing floating around the internet that I wanted to do so bad, and I couldn't convince anyone to go with me, but it was called the Camp Crystal Lake Experience. So you can already see where this is going. You go to this camp and you're at this lake and you're at this you cabins and you stay overnight, but at some point during the night someone dressed as Jason Voorhees is going to try to murder everyone, fake murder, but they're going to come after you. And I'm like, that sounds like so much fun,
depends on what the waiver says. Let me just put it that way, please. Because I don't know if I've ever, that I do martial arts, right?
Yeah.
So how much can I fight back? That's what I want to know.
That's a good point. Yeah. How much?
Right. Because if I injure the Voorhees, am I getting sued? I probably shouldn't get, I stopped going to haunted houses for this reason because at one point, I did punch someone in the face and got escorted out. You know, when they turn on all the lights and they ask you to leave, that was me.
You ruined the experience for everyone.
Yeah, that was me. So I don't go anymore, but I would volunteer to be a Jason Voorhees.
There you go.
Do that, but I would go with you, but then,
Just ruin it for everyone.
When I Jason Bourne... I turn to Jason Bourne, I ruin the experience for everybody. They're all running, and I'm like, I killed him.
Yeah, he's dead. We win. Do we win?
We win!
Yeah.
Where you're like, Lori, get him.
It just, I would have, like, if you could contain yourself, like, that just sounds like so much fun, though.
You just run from him, and he tries to get
you. Yeah,
you got to
survive the night, get away and not get whatever. Like, he's probably got, like, a plastic machete. If he hits you with it, you're dead. Or if he grits his hands on you, you have to, tap out for the night. But just think how exhilarating that would be.
It's an adult version of tag.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd be
I would do it. I would do it, but again, I'd probably get in trouble. Yeah. Like, get out.
Yeah. It does say a lot about the people who are like the vast chasm of difference between people who are like, that sounds like a nightmare, and other people who are like, that sounds like I want to pay to have that experience.
What if like you're running from one and then there's another one?
Oh.
And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Because that would be the ultimate FU, is like the real Jason Voorhees shows up in the experience and actually kills. Like, I wonder if they could have an actor there that's like part of the gig who like, and he's like, and like the fake blood and like maybe an arm falls off, something like that. And that would make everybody panic.
I think we're describing the plot of like Scream 3.
Which I haven't seen. I haven't seen it.
I feel like at some point, actually, also that's the plot of like, what is it? Nightmare on Elm Street, like New Nightmare or something. When they're making a movie about Freddy, and then Freddy comes to life, and so they're like, it's like a blending of what is real, so I feel like we're this already happened actually in film.
Hey, maybe we could get funding then.
There we go.
Since if it's a reboot or a sequel or a rehash, that's all that's in Hollywood right now. Let's write it.
Oh my god, no kidding. You're telling me. Yeah. Well, let's Lori, tell us about I met Lori at the Fan Fest. Yeah, in the comic book convention we were both at. Mm-hmm. And Lori has a comic book called
Path of the Pale Rider.
Path of the Pale Rider. Maybe eventually death, we don't know. tell us about the book, how it came about.
Okay so I do martial arts. I'm going to make a super long story super short. I was choreographing fights for a production company in 2017. I produced a short film called Catfishing that was basically just fighting. Used to be a calling card of what our fight team could do. The production company asked if I would start writing for them, so I did. So I wrote Path of the Pale Rider under a different name. It was called Dead West. In 2018, okay. As a full-length movie, and was told to pitch it to Netflix. People in the business that I knew read the script, really loved it, said pitch it to Netflix. Not as easy as it sounds
to pitch it to Netflix.
No, yeah. No.
You can't just email support info at Netflix.
Yeah, there's no like Netflix website that says please send your script here.
Yeah.
Turns out you have to hire a literary agent, mm-hmm. who will be your go-between, and Netflix only uses certain agents. So how do you find the agents that they talk to? I still don't know.
Yeah.
But then you do some research and find out that when Netflix. If you were to get through the 17 different checks and balances and they want to buy your script, they buy all the rights.
Yeah.
So you have no longer any creative control over this, and they could shelve it and it could never see the light of day, and there's nothing you can do about it. So I looked at those options and decided it wasn't for me. Let a few people read it, including my husband, and he was like, this is a comic book. And I was like, you know what, you're right. I didn't read comic books as a kid. I came into comics as a young adult, I would say in college, reading things like Who Watches the Watchmen and mm-hmm. East of West and Walking Dead. Like, Image was already a thing, and I was reading a lot of Image, right? I never got into the superheroes. This whole dark, comics really, really calls to me. So yeah. I was reading that right there. And so when my husband said it's a comic, and I was like, well, okay, I think I can do that. And so that was 2020. We started moving into, okay, we're going to turn into a comic. I broke it up into 12 different issues. And so each act of the movie is 4 issues. And then went looking for an artist. Didn't have no idea what I was doing. Like, honestly, when you first start writing comics, you're like, I have an idea. And then you're like, now what? Right?
I mean, the thing about it is, there's also no industry standard for creating mm-hmm. comics. There's not like a template, you know, because I mean, I've read comic books since I was a little kid. I've read, you know, I've wanted new comic books since I was a little kid. And like, every time I looked into it, it's like, we do it this way. You can do it that way. Here's the way they do it. And you're like, oh, so do it this way.
It's art.
Yeah.
And so with art, I feel like there's rules, but then you can break the rules.
Yeah.
And then when you push the limits is when it really gets interesting. Mm-hmm. So anything art-wise, I feel like you kind of have to be something to stand out. You know what I mean? So I can see your point where it's like it's constantly changing.
Yeah.
Styles are shifting. And it's really all up to what is your preference, right? So that's, you know, it's interesting about comics. So I found actually I was working with a gentleman named David Rodriguez back in 2020, and then the pandemic started to happen. Bad things were happening. I brought in a second artist as a colorist to kind of help with production. Mm-hmm. And then the first one dropped out. And so it was one of those where like you put money into something and you have hopes and dreams and then it all comes crashing down.
Yeah.
And so into the pandemic, like I think we were slightly cursed. One of the artists had a shooting in their apartment complex and then their ceiling collapsed from water damage.
Oh, man.
And then the other artist had a tree fall on his house. So, and then had COVID like 3 times.
I think you're just, are all your artists living on Indian burial grounds or what is happening
Where one was in, where was he at the time? I think he was in Oregon and the other one was here in Texas, but it was just like, it just wasn't meant to be at that time.
Yeah.
And so I took a year off and I was like, you know, I'm going to be patient. And if this is really something that's meant to be, it'll happen. And so I was just kind of paying attention to artist styles and looking at portfolios. And I got a few people that did test drawings of our cowboy Jude St. Clair. And I was like, meh, yes and no. So I just, you know, I sat on it and I learned how to be patient, which is hard for me. but then I met Marco DeFeo on... Well, it was January of 2022, and it was in a Facebook group. It was like connecting comic book writers and artists.
Yeah, there's a ton of them out there.
Yeah, and again, I'm a no name. This is my first time doing a comic, so I'm looking for someone to take a chance on me and vice versa. But Marco's style is super cool. I know you've seen it.
Yeah.
And it's like it's like a good mix of Western and manga style comics. It's not either one, but it's kind of its own thing in the middle. And I really liked it. And so he and I decided to do a comic. So we launched our first Kickstarter, I think March of 2022. And looking back at what I did, it was insane. My first goal was 4,550 for this no name issue one. And, holy cow, I worked my butt off, but, we made our goal and exceeded our goal. We made like $5,200 on our very first Kickstarter. So, it was crazy. And then we've been running since. So every 6 months or so, we release another comic and we went from black and white to color and, brought in a colorist at issue 3 and, did issue 4 and then did a trade paperback. And now we're on issue 5. I have a new interior artist. Gilbert Perez is his name. He's wonderful. And he's, stepping into Marco's shoes. Marco just got too busy. But Marco's still around and he and I are friends, so no bad blood there. He's still going to do covers for us. So nice. You'll still see Marco art involved in Path of the Pale Rider probably for a long time. But yeah, so that's kind of our whole journey right there.
That's yeah. So I mean, what was the impetus of like the story though? I mean, where'd you, because it's, you know, it's
where did I get the story from?
Yeah, it's like a kind of a little not slightly dystopian, but yeah, you know, I mean, near future zombie-esque, zombie related.
Yeah. Okay. So for people that are listening, Path of the Pale Rider is a world where death is broken.
Okay.
And so it's people, animals, insects, fish, nothing dies correctly. Your body can die, but your soul doesn't leave your body upon death. So you're still conscious, but in your dead body. And as your body rots, your brain is rotting. So you could lose your memories. You could become violent. You could become detached. It's like having dementia and fast forward, but your body is also rotting. So that's the premise of this. Okay. And so when I was writing for the production company, I was writing like, you know, lots of martial arts. We were going to go into production and I was like, I really like zombies. But I want to do something different. Yeah. I want to, you know, here's the things that I dislike about zombie genre is I dislike the fact that, nobody is trying to fix things. You know what I mean? If it's a virus or if it's a, government involvement, whatever it is, who's trying to fix it? Who's trying to figure it out? There's got to be somebody.
Yeah.
But they never show you that. They never show you that person's journey. It's just trying to survive the zombies. And I was like, well, what if we also gave them like their humanity back? It makes things a lot more terrifying to think about, because then you have ethics and then you have, existentialism,
yeah,
which I wasn't anticipating, but it's there. You know, when you start world building and it's like, okay, well, if animals can be butchered, animals could be slaughtered but not butchered, like a cow is still moving,
yeah,
so it's resisting, how what are we eating, and would it still move in that ground beef patty? So are you going to eat a hamburger that still moves?
Oh yeah. Yeah. If it's dead, it's already dead, but
it's already dead, but it's still moving.
Yeah.
You know, those chicken nuggets don't sound so good anymore. people are like, well, we'll become vegetarian. That's it. Like no more meat. And I'm like, well, here's the other problem. The pesticides don't work. Right. Cause even though the bugs are undead, they're probably not so smart, and they only do like what, three things? They sleep, they eat, and they procreate. That's what bugs do. So they're still eating crops, even though they don't need to. So how do you stop undead bugs? And then what is that, again, what does that do to our food supply? What does it do to our water? And then the ethical questions is like, what happens to people after they're undead? At what point are they allowed to, like, should they own property? Can they drive? Do you have to go to work on Monday after you died? Vote? Like, a nightmare. You know, it's like, what happens? What happens to these people? And as they decay, they get more chaotic, and that it hits them all differently. Like dementia. Some people are just forgetful, and other people become downright nasty.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it does bring up a lot of different, especially when there's not like a set path that they all go down on, you know,
right?
Like, you know, then
it's
there's
different timing. It depends on if they have a head wound.
So this is that you're at issue number 5 is coming out right now. You said how long do you plan on running this thing?
It's a long one. So I wrote it. I wrote the first one, the first movie, and we broke it up into 12.
Okay.
There's a second arc and there's a third arc.
Okay.
So if I follow the same formula, then it's 36.
And do you think now that could change?
It can't change. Well, I mean, like if we give, like right now our Kickstarters are bringing in like 6 to 65. So as we grow, if I start getting like 10, then I might be able to do bigger issues. So instead of 24 pages, maybe we do 48 and print it.
Yeah.
So instead of 12, it's 6, but it's still the same story. It's just we're able to afford to release more of the story at a time. And so, I mean, it just depends on how well it's perceived and, you know, if people want to read it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like so far, I mean, if you've been moving at that clip, it's moving pretty well. So.
Yeah, it is. It's grown. My publisher is actually in the UK. And yesterday he does these, like, he calls them nomad tours. and he has our trade paperback, and he goes to different bookstores and they have the option to like buy our whole collection, which he was in Glasgow. And so there's a store called Forbidden Planet in Glasgow that has Path of the Pale Rider sitting on the shelf of yesterday.
Nice.
Which is insane in my mind. Like my first bookstore. It's like a Barnes and Nobles, you know what I mean? That's how big this store is. And my book is in Glasgow.
There you go.
I'm in Dallas. It's in Glasgow.
It's like David Hasselhoff. He's big in Germany.
That's what I was I was laughing about that because my friend George Medina, he has a book with them too. So like there's my book and then there's his book right next to each other. And I was like, who's that guy's name from Baywatch? He's like, David Hasselhoff. I'm like, yeah, that's it. And I was like, we're having a David Hasselhoff experience. You know what I mean? Where you become popular in a weird other country. And you're like, I don't know.
Everyone should be so lucky to be the Hoff.
I know. For real. And I mean, like, we're nowhere near that. Let's be honest. It's just like the first time my book is on a shelf in a bookstore physically. So that's super cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, as the book grows, how much of the growth are you working on compared to your publisher and trying to, you know, I mean, the especially if you're doing Kickstarters, how does that work having the publisher involved too?
Well, he's just doing the trade paperbacks.
Got it.
Because, again, he's taking them to like big bookstores.
I see.
And the bookstores are not going to carry the individual issues. Yeah. They just don't. I think that one did, however. They did buy some of the individual issues. But so for me, I'm producing my own individual issues, so 5, 6, 7, 8. And then when we get to the end of 8, we'll release the trade paperback again. And then that one will be – those are international, which is super cool. And so – but what's nice about the Kickstarter is that people are getting in at the beginning. And those – I take care of my Kickstarter people. They get the story first.
Yeah,
they get it in PDF first, and then I ship out their books first before I take them to cons, before I go to store visits. And so they're really getting the story. If they're into the story, which, you know, that's why they're there.
Yeah.
They're getting it hot off the press. And then when I do my trade paperbacks, I always put bonus material. There's extra stuff. We do journal entries from Jude St. Clair in every issue. So there's extra, you know, stuff from Jude St. Clair. There's all the variant covers that we produced in the, you know, those four issues. So you get a copy of those if you didn't, because there's so many great covers that we do. And unless you're me, you're not getting them all.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a great place to like get the trade. And then you have a piece of all of that art. This last one, I had portions of the script. And I also had a map of the apocalypse from Jude St. Clair, because he's keeping track of his journey through the apocalypse as he tries to figure out what broke death. So.
Now, are you still reading anything coming out these days? Any comic books?
I read a lot of indie just because that's what I do. Because I write, and then I have podcasts as well. I do 3 podcasts. So I have the Tuesday Morning Brew. So I'm interviewing indie creators and help promoting when they're running campaigns, stuff like that. Wednesdays, I run this other show called the Any One World Showcase, which is with my publisher. And so I interview other creators with that publisher. And then I have a show every other Friday called Killer Karen, which is an absolute riot, where I put on a blonde wig. Yes. And I take on the personality of a Karen, and I just harass the people that come on the show. And it's kind of like podcast by fire. So we still promote your things, but just like she will try to just derail you on every single thing and insult you and call you incels, and she hates comics and blah blah.
It's like,
but it's just fun.
Like what is it?
Between two ferns. Yes.
Thing. Yeah.
I'm not even as bad as he is. Some of the stuff that Zach does is just really inflammatory. So we're not quite that bad. Because I don't want to get canceled, but it's like that. Like she has her own personality, and it's wild. So I do those 3 things. So I'm reading a lot of indie just because that's the community I'm in. I've also met quite a few novelists. And I rebind books. I'm sorry. I do all these crazy things, right? So I rip off covers of novels and I build a hardcover for it. And then I design a logo and stuff for it. And I out of heat transfer vinyl, and I put it all together. So I've been getting commissions on these. And so I'm having a good time. So one of my friends, Joe Vasquez, no, Joe Salazar. Wow, brain. I don't even remember who's Vasquez. I must know a Joe Vasquez somewhere. Joe Salazar, she's wonderful. And she has this book called The Dead Weight, which is another zombie book. And I enjoyed it so much. I was like, I'm gonna rebind this. And she was like, can I have one? I was like, of course.
Yeah.
So she sent me, she's like, can I have two? I'm like, of course. So she sent me a couple books and I've been working on rebinding stuff like that. So I'm reading, you know, other people's books, and I've been reading Slaughterville by Chris Brown. I just like reading. I enjoy everything. So I have two books that I haven't even unboxed right here. Well, this one, I know what it is. This is Carissa Grant's hardcover. But like, I back so many Kickstarters and I lose track. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea which one is in that box.
Yeah,
well, I'll enjoy that later.
It's so funny because, like, in an industry where, you know, I mean, I grew up loving reading comic books, and I find, and I may still go to order some new stuff every week, and but my God, most of it I'm pretty thoroughly disappointed by.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah. There's very little that I read that I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, there's a couple of creators, yeah, that I like a lot that are usually pretty consistent, but you know, so yeah, as you go, you know, venture out into the Kickstarter world and the indie world, you realize how much is out there. Not only that, but like, I always, you know, and you know this, just encourage people to get out there and look at that world, because there's, yeah, so there's such a bigger breadth of genres and creativity, and because you're not constrained by an editor telling you that you have to, you know, hey, we have, in 3 months we have this crossover, yes, event, and we've got to do this, you know, mini series. It's just, you get to do whatever the hell you want to do,
right?
And yeah, in most of it for little to no money, sometimes out of pocket money at your expense. So it's like, it truly is just the art coming out.
Yeah, that's one of the joys of being a creator in this day and age, when there are a ton of places where you can crowdfund, because like you said, there isn't a publisher that's like, no, you can't have that topic, or you have to add this subject into your book. You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, where they're pulling the strings, blah, blah, blah. So it's just a double-edged sword, because one, you get to do whatever you want, but also you're in charge of your own marketing.
Yeah.
Because
daunting, but also
that's
good.
The hardest part, right? Because we all have these great stories that we want to tell, but people just don't know you exist.
Yeah.
And on Kickstarter, where everybody has a story and everybody has a great idea, how do you stand out? So that's the hard part, right?
Yeah.
But at least we get the joy of just creating and getting the story the way that you want it, and having it be out there is half the battle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of how my book came to be. I was working. I volunteered to work for a do you know who Fabian Nicieza is? He's a writer. He co-created Deadpool with Rob Liefeld. So, mm-hmm, and he's written a bunch of, you know, he wrote X-Men, X-Force, any Marvel, DC thing he's written. But his brother who's also written for Marvel, owns like a kind of small indie company, Apex Comics. And they were doing a booth at LA Comic Con a few years ago. And they asked, Fabian's like, put on Facebook, he's like, hey, does anyone want to volunteer to work the booth for Apex this weekend at, you know, you get two free tickets to the convention, but you just got to work the booth most of the day. And I was going to be in LA doing shows that weekend anyway. So I'm like, sounds great. Like, I'll hang out. And I had written this script for the comic book. But I'm like, I'll just see if I can glean any information or any like knowledge. Great.
Pick
if not,
brains. Yeah.
So like, the whole weekend, I didn't even bring it up because I didn't want him to feel like here's why. Because I didn't want him to feel like I was taking advantage of this situation. I didn't want to feel like I'm here because selfishly. I'm like, if I could just like glean information off of what you guys are doing, great. But I'm not going to like bug you. But then after the weekend,
he probably would have loved it.
Well,
I love talking shop. So I bet you they were like, why didn't you ask me before like the last 5 minutes of the show?
Well, here's even better happened is like a week later, Mario called me and he's like, hey, I just wanted to call and thank you. Like, I didn't get to talk to you at the show that much. He's like, I know you do stand-up comedy for a living. I go, yeah, yeah. He goes, you write all your own material? And I go, yeah, of course. You know, I've been doing it for, at that point, like 15 years or something. And he goes, you write anything else? And I go, I've written books. I've done, you know, I've written sketch movies. I've written for websites. I've done shows, all kinds of stuff. And he goes, you ever think about writing comic books? And I just go, like,
come on. Go, he just had to lead you right to it. You couldn't be like, I write comics.
Yeah. I was writing this story and I'm like, well, funny you say that. I go, I've actually got this thing I've been working on. And he goes, well, send me the script and I'll, like, you know, I'll give you some pointers. Yes. And I'm like, you know, I'll, like, give you some notes. And I go, great. I send it to him. And like a week later, he emails me back. He's like, hey, I'm going to send this to another editor, have them look at it also. And I'm like, okay, great. And more notes, better. Then I get a conference call from like him and the editor in chief and the publisher. And they're like, hey, the publisher's like, hey, I love this. I want to do this book. Cool. And I was like, oh my God. So that was like some validation, but then I ended up not doing it with them for the reason we were just talking about. There was things they wanted, little things they wanted to change. And I was just like, I don't.
It's like names of your characters or like how they act. And I was just maybe like, bring this in the third act. And you're like, why?
Yeah. I'm like,
you got to mess with it? If you like it, leave it alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, I think. And then I just realized that after we walked through the process of how to do it all, I'm like, I think I can do this. I think I can just do this, you know? But it was a nice, like, it was a nice, like, a little validation, but also that experience of why am I letting someone else tell me how to tell my story, you know?
But that's what irks me so bad, is if they really liked it to the point where they wanted to pick it up, why change it?
Yeah.
Why change what made it special and what caught their attention and what drew them to the story in the first place? Leave it alone. Yeah. Let people tell their story and be authentic, and people will come read it. You can always tell when there's someone in there meddling.
Yeah.
You can always tell.
Well, it's the problem with, and you've probably experienced this if you know, working in doing film stuff and working with some executives, but like I worked in radio and there's a lot of executives in radio. Mm-hmm. I've worked on shows and I wrote for a lot of comedy websites that, you know, there's editors. And I feel like editors especially, they always have to critique. Otherwise, they don't have a job.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, they're fucking useless if they don't change shit. And they're not always changing it because they think they just have to fuck with it, because if their stink isn't on it, if they're just handing it to the next person, then eventually they're like,
what are we paying you for?
Yeah, it's like, what exactly, like that scene in Office Space, like, what exactly did you say you do here? I think it probably like prickled me that way, because I'm like, I've quit working for websites. So I'm like, I'm not dealing with this editor anymore. Like, I don't want my name on the shit that you're putting out.
Terrible.
So, you know, yeah. So it's nice to have that autonomy to just be like, no, I just created this. Here it is. Nobody else fucked with this.
Right. Right. And that's what's so great about indie. And I tell you this, I went on a different podcast a while ago, and they were they're more mainstream. So they were talking about comics. I got invited to come on because they were talking about comics, and they were talking about Marvel versus DC, who had the better continuity and storytelling in comics. Mm-hmm. And I was like, neither. I'm like, if you want good story, you have to leave Marvel and DC, and you have to come to independent. I'm like, even if that's Image.
Yeah.
Because what you're getting is that creator telling their story from beginning to end. So you don't get fan payoff when they're redoing the canon 17 times with these legacy characters. We all love the legacy characters. We're not going to lie. We love them.
Yeah.
But we're not there because it's a good story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might be a good run for a little bit. And then it's probably some crap. And then it's a good story again. And then it's some more crap. But like, if you're going to read something start to finish and enjoy it, you got to get out of that where they're constantly changing out writers and creators.
Yeah.
Because someone like yourself and myself, we're going to tell the story from beginning to end in the way that we want you to read it. And that's where the fan payoff and like the emotional attachment comes from.
Yeah.
Is from a singular storyteller.
Well, and that's so like I grew up in the 80s and 90s with Chris Claremont as an X-Men fan, reading Chris Claremont, who wrote X-Men for 17 years straight. And like, right. It was consistent. He wrote these and built these characters as people with ups and downs and real like psychological profiles and tics and things they, you know, like real people. And then after that, it's just like, oh no, this is just a writer using this character as a tool for this story, like insert. And like I said, there's times when, you know, there'll be some good storytelling in it, but overall it's like, yeah, it's just, I don't want to write a perpetual story, because then there's no character arc that really can connect you to, you know?
Right. So. And it's not only that, it's like, it doesn't even matter, because anything that you're writing, they're just going to undo it when the next person gets their hands on it. So what's the point?
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, indie is all the way, you guys. And they were like, yeah, you got a point. I was like, go read my book.
Yeah. Well, it really is the best too. Cause you can, like I was talking to a guy last night, I did his podcast when promoting my book and we ended up kind of becoming friends. And he's like, since then he's like, oh, he's like, you kind of like inspired me to try to do a comic book. So he's like picking my brain about how to do it. And he's like, do you think you would ever, you know, after, like, would you ever want anyone else to write, like, Kill Stan? And I'm like, no.
No.
I go, because it's 10 issues, and after that, it's done. Like, I've told the story with this character. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a, I don't want this to be 400 issues later, you know? That's, it's just how boring, how much can we tell about, I want to write a different story, you know? Like, to be able to tell a beginning, middle, and end and have that full arc of these people. And, you know, that I feel like there's so much more payoff in that. And really, like, something for a... Like, I don't know if you ever read Why the Last Man by Brian K. Vaughan.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
And it's got a beginning, middle, and end. And,
but
you know...
It's big. And this is... But this is another thing I want to talk to you about, Deez. How many issues is Kill Stan?
10.
10. Okay. Because when we get into things that are like Path that are 36, people don't want to be invested in that.
Sure.
But it's like, but when we read things like Watchmen is not a good example. East of West is giant. Walking Dead is giant. Why the Last Man Standing, Invincible. Mm-hmm. These things are huge. So do we not get to create like that anymore? Has that jumped the shark? Like, Why is it like 6 issues and done? That's what publishers want. They just want it to be done.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple things. I think part of it is that it's the same reason that, you know, X-Men starts over with a new number one every 18 months because number ones sell. So they've kind of gone to this model of like seasons in comic books so it's kind of like a season of a show. So you're like, okay, another season. We started...
So what you're saying is when I get to my next arc, I should call that number one and start over?
Well, I'm not saying you should, but it is a marketing technique that could be used that...
Go 1 through 12 again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. You can just give it a subtitle. You know, it's like Path of the Pale Rider...
Part two.
There you go. That's a pretty easy subtitle.
No, I'll be a little more creative than that.
But I mean, it's... That
just put a number two.
Yeah, just two. T-O-O-2.
Well, and the other thing is artists, like keeping the artist team together for that long is hard.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it becomes easier as you get bigger as a creator. Because, you know, if you like look at these creators who are doing great things, you know, like Brian K. Vaughan and stuff like that, some of their earlier work was 10, 12 issue books, you know. So you kind of get people to kind of buy into what you're doing, and then they'll go on longer rides with you, you know, whereas I think that's, in my opinion, whereas like early on, you know, it's part of the reason I personally chose the book I'm writing to be the first thing I do, because it's 10 issues is digestible. I didn't want to be like, here's a hang with me for 36 issues. You know, I want to be like,
they don't have to with me. Again, it's
312.
Like if you stop at 12, you'll be happy.
Yeah.
But if you want to know what happens next, pick up 13.
There you go. Okay. That's see.
One, and
that's,
also.
yeah. Give it if it's got a good wrap up on the that 12th issue. So it's, but you know, it's such a weird, just trying to capture people's attention at all anymore is such a.
It's hard, and I find that even between like Kickstarters, that I will get a slew of new people, but I'll lose some of the followers, and it's either, you know, financial or they forgot, or you know what I mean. And so it's hard. The hard part I think about being indie is not only consistently producing, but also staying relevant.
Yeah.
Right? Because if I'm producing just 2 issues a year, that's a whole 6 months that people have to wait. How do I keep their interest peaked for 6 months?
Yeah.
And we're going to start picking up speed now that Gilbert is here. He has a little bit different schedule than Marco did. And then we had some really bad printers that were kind of mucking things up, but they're gone. fired. But so we're hoping to do 3, and then I would love to do 4 issues a year.
Yeah.
You know, once every 3 months, if we can do that. But again, it just depends on how everything goes. I mean, I was watching the news today, not to get morbid, but I was watching the missiles come down on Ukraine, and I was like, we're dead. So you never know. We could have nuclear war next week on Thanksgiving Day, and who cares about comic books at that point?
Yeah, doesn't matter how good the Kickstarter did.
Doesn't matter. We're just vaporized.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's economy's hard. You know, there's so much other stuff to grab people's attention, and you know, personally, like, I mean, I'm sure you found this too. The nice thing about Kickstarter is, I got a lot of organic traffic that, yes. You know, where I was surprised at the end of how many, I'm like, I have no idea who this person is. I don't.
Yeah. You know. No, they just find you on Kickstarter. I think Kickstarter is the best one when it comes to that. Because they have so many different categories. So they have like things that are local to you, things that have just launched, things that have just funded, things, you know, projects we love, things that are ending soon. So they have all these different categories you can fall in that different people are like, what's ending soon? Let's go, ooh, what's this? Kill Stan.
Yep.
Click, you know what I mean? Or if you're looking at a Kickstarter, let's say they're looking at yours, and at the very bottom of the screen, they're like, if you like Kill Stan, you might like Path of the Pale Rider.
Yeah.
And it's not like you and I did that. Kickstarter's algorithm is like, this and this are both kind of dark, so maybe they'd like it. You know what I mean? And so I really think they have figured that out with the organic traffic. I don't think any of the other platforms can quite capture that, in my opinion.
Yeah. When I was looking at, you know, because I did a lot, I was trying to figure out, I'm like, what's the best Kickstarter, Indiegogo, GoFundMe? Like, what's the best one? You know, Kickstarter, you have to, if you don't make the goal, you don't get anything. So that's right. That's kind of like a downfall. But then I started looking at projects. Like I went soonest to end, and I filtered with the soonest to end at the top, and I started going through, and I think like I counted that something like, I think it was 42 of the top 50 books or 50 books ending soonest were funded. So mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, these pretty much all these, you know, get funded, you know, and the ones that didn't get funded were stuff that it was like, you know, I mean, it was kind of obvious why maybe it didn't.
I mean, there's different reasons. I mean, it's hard. I've seen creators that have some really great stuff. They just don't have time, because time is a resource, right?
Yeah.
And so if they don't have time to promote, and they don't have time to go on podcasts, and they don't have time to post on social media because they have a full life. A lot of times people just don't know they exist.
Yeah.
Again, so it's like, it's hard to be successful and meet these goals when nobody knows you're there. So it's just hard. Some people have the impression that if I put it on Kickstarter, it'll get funded. It's like, no, there's a lot of work.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work that goes behind it to not only meet your goal, but to surpass it and to really do well. So there's classes on it you can take, and how to approach a Kickstarter. So I always encourage people to do it, but I always encourage people to do their homework before they hit launch, because some people are like, I've launched, now what? And I'm like, there was so much you missed.
Right, Well, that, I mean, I like pre-launched for like 2 months, and then I, you know, I think I had like in the 2 months or in the 2 weeks before it went live, and then the 4 weeks it was live, I was doing
podcast.
Almost a podcast a day.
Every day,
You know, doing shows and posting on social media, getting all the groups. I mean, you're doing the most you can do. I, you know, again, I don't know how much of the organic traffic or traffic I don't know about came from those, but...
They do.
Yeah.
100% they do. And sometimes it's not even on the same day or the same time as when you're live.
Yeah.
Because then they go to like recorded and someone's watching the show that was on Tuesday, because my Tuesday morning brew show goes on Tuesday and then people are watching it Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always tell people that are on my show with a campaign, I'm like, just be patient. I'm like, if you don't get any backers now, I'm like, they will trickle.
Yeah.
Like, because people are still watching the recording and usually for the whole next week until the next one goes. So they're out there and it definitely helps. I see it in my own campaigns as well. And sometimes I'll do a survey like, how did you find me? And they're like, oh, you were on John's Long Box, or, you know, they name shows that I've been on. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't go on that one for, you know, like that was 3 weeks ago.
But it worked.
It worked. So people will find you. And as long as you have good material and it's like, it's an original idea, and you have to be able to instill confidence, like, you know, that the project will get funded, not only funded, but delivered, right? Fulfilled. And it's always hardest on that first one, because people want the first one, but people are always worried when you're a first time creator as well.
Yeah.
But then when you start building up your track record, like for me, it's like you can go see like, okay, she's run 6 Kickstarters. She fulfills around, you know, right around the time that she says that she's going to, and everything's been fulfilled. So it's okay. All right. This is a sure thing.
Yeah. 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 It's really a, you know, pretty amazing community considering the kind of large
trust.
Scale of it. Yeah. And the trust in it. So,
yeah.
Well, what about after, so once this 36 issues or 312 issues, however you break it down, how is this, what's the next project, or is there a next project?
Well, I do write other things. Path is the one that, of course, that I head. So I manage, I build the team, I do all the marketing, I build all the Kickstarters, I'm the face for that. I'm also the writer on Psycho Sal, which is the creator is William Russell. And he, it's his idea. And then I kind of flesh out the story. And so I picked up the series with issue number 4. So I wrote 4, 5, and 6. And now we're, so his is built to be like the first 3 is kind of from one set of characters' point of view. The second 3 are from a different character's point of view, same story. And then the last 3 is kind of like the finale from another character's point of view.
Yeah.
So we're moving into that third section. I wrote 7 and I just sat down with him yesterday to flesh out number 8. I should be done with that script before the end of the year. I've been writing anthologies. So I did a piece for Big Dog Inc. On their annual, it was Big Dog Inc. 14, because gosh, they're so old. Just kidding. I love you, Tom Hutchinson. So, but that was fun too, because again, that's writing in someone else's world. And so he was like, this is this, he sent me all the best. I was reading his, that's a long series. What's it called? Legend of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Oz, but told as a Western, and it's super cool because it works great. And so I got to read all that stuff and then write kind of an offshoot character that I think he's going to pick up and then do a series with. But so it was myself and then him, Tom Hutchinson. And then I think the guy's name was Barry Dutton, who wrote another character for Big Dog Inc. So that Kickstarter'd and it's due out soon. It went to print. So I should have my fancy copy soon. And then I wrote, it was a piece for the Chihulu Invades Fairyland. And Travis Gibbs heads that up. And this is super cool. So it's Lovecraftian horror.
All right.
Retold as the original fairy tales, right? So I did Beauty and the Beast. Chihulu style. Chithulu. I can never say that right. Chithulu. But there's a ton of people involved in that one. So my story is 14 pages, but some of there's like 10 pages, 2 pages, 4 pages, 6 pages. And it's just a bunch of retelling of these classic fairy tales from the Lovecraftian point of view. And so that one will go to Kickstarter, I think, in January.
Okay.
This is volume number 2.
Okay.
So I'm still writing. I script supervise for Carissa Grant, which is basically reading her stuff and just helping her with dialogue. And I bind books, I bake cookies, I bake sourdough bread. I make my own hot sauce, which is part of the comic. And then I just, I'm super busy just doing my thing.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. So I write things. I have other scripts in my head, but I'm not ready to let them out until Path gets a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
Running 2 different projects of Kickstarter sounds horrendous.
Yeah, it sounds like a daunting nightmare.
And people do it all the time. Like I don't know if you're familiar with John Westhoff, but he has like 4 different projects and he'll rotate through them throughout the year. And I'm like, that sounds like a logistical nightmare to me.
Right. Yeah.
I just want to do Path. I want to bind books and cook my sourdough. And if, hey, you want to taste some hot sauce, come see me.
Well, that's a good combination of things. So at least we know there's more ideas in there coming once this is done then, right?
Well, and I mean, like when I do anthologies, other stuff comes out and I do other things with Path. Like I write riddles, right?
Yeah.
So on the back cover of every issue is a riddle to solve. So I'm creating an experience with Path of the Pale Rider. So it's not just writing and I've written it in 2018 and it's just there. It's like I'm doing secret websites and phone numbers to call and things show up in your mailbox. And so there's this whole other experience that goes along with Path that I manage. So I do that and I write choose your own adventure books with them too.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's a whole world in
itself. It's a whole world.
Yeah. So someone figures out the mystery, they get sourdough bread.
That would be awesome. I would love to send someone sourdough bread as a reward.
That is a
great
reward.
One time only. Yeah.
There's one loaf of bread.
But I did. I mailed out free samples of the hot sauce in little packets with the trade paperback. And people are like, Lori. I'm like, what? They're like, is this a condom? And I was like, no. You're like, is it lube? And I'm like, it's hot sauce. Yeah, I'm like, pay attention. Well, it was on the Kickstarter.
It could be lube, but you'll regret it.
Yeah, I was like, it might burn. It might burn some things if you put it in places it's not intended to go.
Listen, I don't kink shame anyone.
Hey, man, it's your kink. Yeah. You deal with it. I have sent out hot sauce. I sent out hot sauce bottles of sampler size, the 5-ounce size with campaigns. So, in fact, I have to go make a batch today so I can fulfill.
Nice. There you go.
Green sauce sold out. It was weird.
The green sauce?
Yeah. So, remember I was doing a con after the con that we did?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Cowtown and I took that one. I could take food items. And I sold out all of the green sauce went and then most of the mango habanero. I don't know. It goes in weird phases. I don't know if it's the time of year. The last show I went to, all the mango habaneros sold out.
I don't know. So, well, people are getting ready for tamale season.
Yes.
Well, Lori, tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find the book, where they can find any Kickstarters running to support and follow you.
Gotcha. So I'm Lori Calcaterra. You can find me on most socials. You can either find me as Lori Calcaterra or Path of the Pale Rider. The best place to go is to the Facebook group, Path of the Pale Rider. You have to answer one question to get in. I don't care what you put. Put something so I know you're not a scammer or a bot. The question is, do you like comics? You can answer alpacas and I'll let you in.
Yeah, well.
That's just how it goes. But if you don't answer, it like rejects you automatically. So put something.
I'm going to join and my answer will be, I am a robot. And then
you in because you put an answer, which is funny. So that's the best place to go. You can find me on Instagram at Lori Calcaterra. You can find me on TikTok. TikTok is fun because you can watch me cook things. You can watch me bind books and you can watch me do stuff with comics. So that's fun. I also do weird shenanigans on there too. So the TikTok is at Path of the Pale Rider with an underscore between all the words, which I regret because it's so freaking long. I'm still on X, which is at Path Pale Rider. I'm on Threads. I'm on all the things. I have a website, which is great. It's www.pathofthepalerider.com. We do have a shop. So if I'm not running a campaign, you can get physical copies of books and digital downloads and merch all from the website. The only thing you can't get there is the hot sauce, because I'm not FDA approved. I'm approved to state level. So, but international people, if you want a copy of the trade paperback, that's on anyoneworld.com. anyoneworld.com. And then right from the first page, the trade paperback is there. You can click on it. It takes you to my collection. But that those ship internationally, which is great. So if you're in, you're in Scotland, you're in Australia, it doesn't matter. You can get a copy.
You can get a copy. If you'll pay for the shipping, you can get a copy.
Yeah, that's right. You can watch my shows every week. The Tuesday Morning Brew is the great one, which is, again, it's every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can get it on my YouTube channel at Lori Calcaterra 360 or the Madness Comic Network. Anyone World is on the ASAP Imagination channel, and Killer Karen is on Madness and Lori. Killer Karen is a lot of fun. If you guys want to, it's short. It's like 30 minutes and then some bloopers. So it's like 35 minutes of just absolute antics. So if you want to laugh at something and slap your face a couple times and wonder why we do what we do,
that's there a good you go. One.
No. My next Kickstarter will be in February. I believe the first week of February. So,
and that's for issue number 5?
It'll be for issue 6. 6.
Okay.
Which, for you guys, if you're not into the story, issues 1 through 4 is kind of like, again, first act of a movie. It's the world building. It's the protagonist, you know, like getting to know your protagonist, understanding how the world works, all of that. Issue 5 is where we pick up the second act, where everything goes wrong. So we're in the thick of it. It's taken off. This is a good place to be. So if you're going to pick up, like, you can order the stuff off my website and get caught up before 6 comes out, because you're not going to want to miss 6. My personal favorite issue is number 7. And we're so close.
Coming soon. Coming soon.
So good. Once you guys read 7, there's no going back.
So get on board. Get that first 6, whether it's the trade and the next 2 or all. Just get all 6 of the floppies.
Well, for right now, you have 5. You can order 5.
And 6 coming soon.
And then 6 will be in February. So,
yeah, make sure and follow the Kickstarter. Support the Kickstarter when it comes out, guys. And follow Lori on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. And go get those copies. Buy some copies for Christmas.
Christmas, man. Yeah, I got issues 1 through 5 in stock. So trade paperbacks, it's all here. So if you want something, let me know. I'll ship it to you. Get
right.
it for a nice giant stocking stuffer.
Easy enough. Perfect. All right, guys. Well, we're going to get out of here for today. We appreciate you listening. As for me, again, go to deececomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows, live dates. Minimal through the end of the year, but you'll be able to catch me around Texas and North Carolina before 2024 is up. And then 2025 is going to be everywhere. So that's it for the Social Hour. I've been Deece, and for Lori, thank you guys all very much, and we will see you all next week.